Welcome to a podcast of The Mike Novak Show. Don't forget that you can listen to Mike live on Sundays from 8 to 10 a.m. on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Now every winter when the cold wind blows, the neighborhood squirrels all know where to go. If they don't think about it, it's automatic. You find them all chilling up in my attic. I was sitting in a chair watching it snow when a noise came from the attic. I turned up the carols and covered my ears, nothing if not pragmatic. Then I remembered all the Christmas stuff I packed away with so much care. A plastic tree, bulbs and wreaths were all being stored up there. La 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 la. Squirrels dancing in my attic, I hear them clicking away. They've been dancing all night, I think they might be waiting on Christmas Day.
Live from the beautiful Showcase Studios on South Pulaski Road, just across the street from the 53A bus stop and in between Paco's Tacos and Zaka Tacos, it's The Mike Novak Show, Chicago's only locally broadcast green, gardening, and environment program. Heard every Sunday right here on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM.
Good planets are hard to find. Temperate zones and tropic climes. True currents and thriving seas. Wind blowing through breathing trees. Strong ozone and safe sunshine. Well, good planets are hard to find. Good planets are in the main.
This hour of the Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by Sid's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. If Mother Earth and Father Time had a baby, never mind. Here he is, Mike Novak.
Are we strapped in here?
We are. Are we ready for takeoff?
Are we ready for takeoff? You know, sometimes, you know, it's a good thing that passengers on airlines can't see what's going on in the cockpit most of the time, is what I'm thinking. Of course, they're all professionals.
So are we.
Sort of. In an odd way. And by the way, that squirrel song was sent to me by one of our tweeters. I think it was Snarky Vegan.
Nice.
Yeah, Snarky Vegan sent that. And after last week, remember we were talking about how dumb squirrels are?
Yes.
And how, you know, you'll see them in the rear view mirror of your car after they zigged when they should have zagged. But so she sent me this, and it's at this website, if I can find it here. And I'm operating with the other, both computers here.
Snappy J-Dog on Twitter is, she's listening, time to listen to Mike Now Show and do some garden planning.
Well,
we got garden planning happening today? Anything?
Yeah, we've got Connor Shaw right here in the studio, who schlepped all the way in from Monee, Illinois, which is, you know, it's near Memphis, something like that. I don't know. It's quite a way south, right, Connor?
Yeah.
Yeah. but he is with Possibility Place Nursery, and they do a lot of growing and selling of native plants, mostly trees and shrubs, right?
No, actually, trees, shrubs, vines, and perennials. And
pull that microphone just a little closer there, Connor.
Sure. No, we do the whole gamut. We grow trees, shrubs, vines, and prairie plants, savanna plants, herbaceous.
So everything?
Everything, yes.
But didn't it used to be kind of primarily trees and shrubs, or has it always been the other?
It was primarily trees.
And, yeah.
And over the years, it's evolved to the others. As we felt need to grow sort of a full circuit on the native plants, we try to grow a large select cross section of all types.
So, in terms of gardening, that's one direction. So, if you've got a question about native trees, plants, shrubs, vines, prairie plants, perennials, whatever you want. 773-838-9278, because this guy knows a lot of stuff. Unfortunately, I have learned that the hard way when he sits in on some of my talks occasionally.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He's my nemesis, Connor Shaw. But he's a great guy, and I'm glad you're in the studio. But the other thing he and I are going to talk about is the state of the business, too, the horticultural world. Because, come on, let's face it, everybody's been going through a hard time the last couple of years. The economy has been in the tank. And unfortunately, one of the things you find out if you're in this business, see, I'm in the kinds of business that are sometimes considered marginal, not only horticultural business, but show business. So, you know, I do the entertaining and caroling during the holiday season. In a recession, what's the first thing that gets cut back? The Christmas party.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. The Christmas party's gone.
Number one thing I noticed this year at the holidays rolled around, being the office manager here and working in front, like all the holiday greeting cards we got last year,
yeah,
I hung all around the office. And this year I had less than a quarter of the amount I had the year before.
So if that's how you make your money, you're hurting. Mm. If you're in horticulture, what's the first thing people say about plants, which is, oh, well, it's just plants. We don't need to. We can get by this year, or we'll, you know, what's plan B? You don't hire the landscaper. You do it yourself. If you're doing it yourself, you go to the Home Depot.
And you may not even be doing it yourself. I mean, there are the nursery industry, particularly on the tree and shrub end, has been dramatically hurt. They depended largely on new construction, which is, for all intents and purposes, non-existent. And many of them we're all down dramatically in selling of trees in particular, shrubs along with that. Some of the annual groups and stuff that I read seem to be not down near as much, but some of the trees sellers are down as much as 50% or greater.
Holy smoke.
And then some of the prices that are being sold at are dramatically discounted too. And the problem is there's no holes to put them in. We way oversupplied, and now we're in the process of shrinking to some point. I don't know what the point is.
Well, that's an interesting point. I'm going to get the idea of being oversupplied and some of the other things that are going on in the industry right now. But I do want to let people know what else is happening on the show today, the Connor Shaw First Hour. I got a text last night from Rick DeMaio. He says he's in the hospital.
Our weatherman is under the weather.
Says he's got pneumonia.
Oh.
And that's all I know. And Rick, if you're listening, he's probably not. He's probably sleeping.
I hope he's heavily medicated in a nice, warm, cozy bed.
No Rick DeMaio today. But in the second hour, and like I said, it's all I know, is that I got a text from him. And, you know, I wonder if they wore them down there over at the...
I know. Another friend of mine mentioned, like, earlier in the week on Facebook, I believe, that he was just diagnosed with walking pneumonia.
Well, Kathleen was telling me last night there's some sort of bug going around that's just knocking people flat.
That's what I had the week over New Year's Eve. And then when I wasn't here for the show the following day, it knocked me square. I'm still feeling it in the chest. It's still not 100% gone.
So Rick DeMaio, get better. We wish you well, and we'll struggle on without you. In the second hour, a couple of people who have been gardening sustainably for over 30 years, Ron and Vicky Nowicki. You know them, don't you, Connor?
Yes.
They are going to be on the show along with Megan Dunning from Morton Arboretum, talking about a seminar they're doing at the Morton Arboretum next Saturday called Living Off and With the Land. And it's about permaculture, the whole idea of I like to call it organics on steroids, because it's not just growing organically. It is providing habitat. It is recycling everything in sight, just trying not to leave any kind of a footprint where you exist, and actually maybe leaving the land better than when you first got there. So we will talk to Ron and Vicky in the 10 o'clock hour. In the Good Growing segment, Beth Osman from Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm in Ottawa A lot of sustainability issues today on the show. But they have a CSA, and they sell meat. Now, Snarky Vegan is not going to appreciate this.
Mm-mm.
But I like a hamburger. I like a little cow action every now and then.
I went to a hamburger restaurant in the city that only served 100% grass-raised beef.
Uh-huh.
And it was the most delicious hamburger I've ever had in my life.
I know.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Knowing that they died humanely, that they were raised naturally, it made a difference, you know. Because they say that when you shock an animal in the process in which they slaughter most livestock, it releases a toxin into the body because obviously the animal is under stress. When you do it in a humane way, you actually get better flavored meat because those toxins have not been released into the
animal. Well, that's what
animal.
We will ask Beth.
Yeah.
Because that's what they're all about, is their CSA is about being sustainable and about doing it humanely. And still a lot of people who are omnivores who like their meat. So why not get it from a place?
If you're going to do it right.
Yeah.
And do it in a way where it still is healthy for your body, even though obviously the benefits to an all-vegetarian diet can be obvious, but still.
Sure.
I like steak, too.
I know.
I do. Yummy.
I understand. I completely understand. So that's on the show today. Let's start with a phone call. Go back to the...
Okay. We had some squirrel tweets that were
pretty good. Yeah. Let's see. Leah writes, squirrels chewed through my roof and opened up a nut bowling alley in between the first and second floors. Thanks, Leah. And Snappy J Dog wrote about our...
Squirrel song
going on. By the way, I need to let you know that, again, My Skinny Garden is, she's always baking during the show.
She's a cooker.
She
we
gets
like
up
her.
Early and then she bakes and she cooks during the show. And she says she'll be making cake balls during Mike Novak, testing them to see if they're suitable for community garden bake sale. What, you're going to try them out on the community and see if anybody drops dead? And then,
I don't think she means it like that. I doubt they're toxic.
By the way, the Christmas songs, the squirrel songs, by a guy named P. Martz, and apparently he does these every year. He's been doing it since 2004, when he wrote A Very Squirrely Christmas, and then Santa's Bringing Presents, and Joy to the Squirrels, and The Fur Tree, F-U-R, wah, wah, wah. You're not laughing, Connor. You don't think that's funny, huh? Okay.
No.
That was a joke?
I know.
Okay.
It was a fur piece.
Ba-da-bum. I don't have a rim shot, so I go with that. So anyway, if you want more squirrel songs, www.mondovox, mondovox.com/squirrels. But I can promise you I won't be playing any more squirrel songs. I just thought I would do that one. All right. And we're going to start with a call. Let's just go right to the phones and maybe you can help us with this, Connor. You're in the studio. That's part of the price of admission. Sometimes you have to answer questions. So just lean into that mic. We'll talk to Joe in Libertyville. Good morning, Joe. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. Appreciate it.
No problem.
Question. I've been an avid gardener, listening to your show. I moved into a house in Libertyville a few years ago. And I put my garden in, and like a month or two later, everything just like petered out. I thought it was like, excuse me, verticillium wilt, fusarium wilt. I mean, everything, peas, peppers. I took out my organic gardening Bible, and it mentioned black walnut trees put out a toxin in the roots that kill everything. I've tried.
Well, not everything. And it's,
well,
how do you pronounce it? Juglone or juglone? Or
Juglone. What, I assume you got black walnut trees in the neighborhood?
Yeah, in my backyard. They're huge. They've got to be, I don't know how many hundreds of years old, but they're gigantic. And I tried container gardening.
That would seem to me that would work. I mean,
well, it sort of hasn't. Because everything just... You know,
well, the next question is, how much sun are you getting?
A lot. I mean, enough.
Well, enough. A lot of those vegetable gardens like full sun.
I know. I've been gardening for, you know, a long time, but it's, yeah, I mean, if I'd have known then what I know now, I wouldn't have moved where I did, because I got like about a half acre in the backyard and these gigantic black walnut trees, and it just kills everything.
Well, I'm trying to understand why it would kill plants in a container, especially if...
Unless those roots escape into the ground.
Well, do you have a barrier at the bottom of the container?
Yeah, just, you know, 5 gallon bucket.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Oh, so it's a 5 gallon bucket with
well, there's a bunch of tomatoes.
With drainage holes, right?
Yeah. I've tried everything.
Yeah, it just doesn't, to me, that doesn't make any sense to me. Yeah. I think something else must be going on. And here's the other thing about growing plants there. There are juglone tolerant plants.
Okay.
I'm looking at a site right now from University of Wisconsin, UW-Madison, which I could forward to you if you want.
That would be great. Yeah, if you could. Yeah,
you can find them all over the place. I mean,
okay.
what I just did is I just typed in Google juglone tolerant plants.
Okay.
J-U-G-L-O-N-E tolerant plants. And the very first site was...
J-U-G-L-O-N-E. Okay.
And the very first site is the UW site. And it includes some vegetables.
I'll be danked.
Yeah. There are some. Let's see here.
Caldwell.
Not much. Not much.
Okay, I know you got all the callers. One more quick question. A few blocks down from my house, I've got a massive chestnut tree. And I picked them off the ground and tried to make roasted chestnuts, and didn't work. Should I pick them before they fall to the ground? Or
chestnuts
after?
Roasting.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you thought. You got sucked in by that song, right?
Yeah. It's a huge tree, and they put out, chestnuts everywhere, but I was picking them off the ground, and then I went to YouTube, and it says how you cut the little, you make a little cut in the top, and you roast them, and it was just,
Well, give us, what kind of chestnut?
When did they fall, and when did you pick them up? Was there
It was at the end of fall. It's a huge tree. I mean, we got some incredible trees in Libertyville, but,
I would think that you'd certainly want to get them fresh. I don't think you'd want them laying around too long.
Okay, so you pick them off the tree? Because
when we collect seed in the wild, we prefer picking them off the tree versus picking them off the ground. Obviously, if the tree is huge and you can't get to the top, it makes it difficult. But
right.
Yeah.
What kind of chestnut is that likely to be since the American chestnut?
It's more likely the Eurasian one.
It's huge. I mean, it's a gigantic tree. It's really, really big.
Because, as you may or may not know, the chestnut, American chestnut tree is all but extinct here in the United States because of disease at the beginning of last century.
Right. Yeah, one time it accounted for, one out of four trees in Appalachia.
I'll be dinged.
And it was the only tree that consistently produced mass crops every
year.
And
then what's the tree that my memory just lost me, puts out little yellow berries and they recall it like smells like vomit or rancid butter.
Oh, the ginkgo?
Ginkgo,
yeah. Say thank you. There you go. Yeah. I got a male and female tree right down from my house. And it's,
are you kidding me? There's a female tree?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
Oh, huge. Big.
Yeah, but that being said, I've been in Riverside. We did planting in Riverside, and on Harlem Avenue, there's huge ginkgos up and down the street. And then one ginkgo had a sign on it that says, please don't climb the tree.
Yeah.
And I looked at it. I said, well, why would anybody climb that tree? And he said, well, the people from the city would come out, Oriental people in particular,
exactly.
And they would actually collect and climb the tree. And
exactly.
He didn't want his tree hurt.
That's funny you say that because there's every time at the end of the year, there's a few Oriental people who come and they fill up their 5 gallon bucket. And
we use the word Asian nowadays.
Asian.
I think
Asian.
All right.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. No. It's a beautiful tree. And if I'm not mistaken, there's four trees near Ground Zero in Hiroshima that still are alive. They're like indestructible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow,
that's amazing. All right, well, very quickly, back to the juglone problem. By the way, vegetables that will tolerate juglone are allium, onion, basically.
Okay.
Beans. You said your beans didn't work.
And I wouldn't swear to it, but, I mean, I got so disgusted that...
Don't give up too quickly, all right?
Yeah, okay.
Carrots, corn, melons, and squash.
Okay.
Now... but I don't know. I'm just kind of flabbergasted that you wouldn't be able to grow a tomato in a container.
You move over to container, you got drainage issues, you got fertility issues. It's a whole different game plan.
Yeah, no, I know. I am. I'm
Here's what I'm going to say. You know, I don't think 5 gallons is enough for a tomato.
Okay.
A 5 gallon tomato container is small.
Yeah.
Get the largest container you can. Put one plant in it. All right. Because tomatoes take up the root system gets huge. They suck up a lot of water. They suck up a lot of nutrients. You can't really let a tomato compete in a container with another plant.
No. Yeah.
Because it'll hurt. The other plant will just not do well, and a tomato will suffer as well.
Okay.
I would say this time, this year, get a larger container. Pay attention to the fertility issues in the container. Make sure there's great drainage, and make sure there's plenty of sun. And I'll bet you'll do better with the tomatoes.
I'll give it a shot.
And in the meantime, write to me or check out that site.
If you can't find it, write down drug loan tolerant.
Go to the university sites.
Yeah, I will.
Because they'll give you the straight information, anything with a .edu on it.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your time. I really do. You got a great show. I listen to you every weekend.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
And I just want to give a shout-out to my friend Chuckster.
Chuckster! Where's Chuckster?
Where's Chuckster?
Where in the world is Chuckster?
Well, we're working here today. So I appreciate your call, and thanks for the time. And
all right, Joe, I appreciate it. You have a great day now.
You do the same.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
It's the Mike Novak Show in Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FMC. You've been here 20 minutes. We haven't discussed any of the stuff we said we were going to talk about. That's the way it works on this show, right?
What were we going to talk about?
I have no idea.
Well, then we've done it.
By the way, Jan Little says hi.
Ah.
She was with the Morton Arboretum. She's moved on.
She's down in the Carolinas.
Oh. Hey, Jan, if you're listening, I don't know if she's listening. She's on Facebook here, so she's saying hi there. A couple of things before we get to the heart of our conversation here. Well, some natives, some industry stuff. I forgot to mention that Heather worked really hard this week in putting a list of questions together so we can give away some tickets to the Chicago Mayoral Forum on Community and Environmental Issues, which is going to be... let me find it. Boy, so unorganized here. It's because I got too many things. Here it is. It's organized by the Friends of the Parks and the Streeterville Organization for Active Residents in partnership with a whole bunch of other groups. And as you know, we've been giving away tickets on WCPT all week for that. The forum is this coming Wednesday, January 19th, 7 to 9 p.m., at the Chicago Marriott downtown, 540 North Michigan, 7th floor. Now, we're going to try to give away some of these tickets today. We will give away some of these tickets, and I'll let you know you're going to be on a will call situation, so you're going to have to pick them up at the forum, which means be there at 6 p.m. It's going to be a lot of people, and if you don't want any issues about getting seated, and there won't be if you go to will call and you get there at 6. So let's do that. What do you want to start with, Heather?
Anyone you want. I like them all.
They're really cool.
I thought they were fun. It was a nice mix of Chicago trivia, Chicago political trivia, and green.
Okay. We'll start with number one. Who was Chicago's first mayor? It's an easy one. 773-838-9278. 773-838-9278. Who was Chicago's first mayor for bonus points? Tell us when he served. For bonus points, tell us what political party.
If they get the bonus points, we'll throw them something from our prize bag.
Okay, sure. We can do that. Let's get back quickly to Connor Shaw from Possibility Place Nursery. By the way, all the information is up on my website, mikenovak.net. If you go to this week's show, you'll see the lovely picture of Connor, and you will see the link to Possibility Place Nursery, which didn't start out as... native plants. I mean, your dad
Dad never did.
No, I know. Dad was interested in being a farmer.
No, he was actually...
No?
No, he was...
It says so on the website, I thought.
Well, yeah. Well, he actually bought the farm as a work site for his children. He went to work and left a list of things for us to do, and we proceeded to do it, and Mother was the enforcer. And he was actually a manager for Marshall Field and Company.
Mm-hmm.
And we basically had a very small farm, and we raised sheep, and then I had some crops.
So you had sheep and crops, and the whole family was involved?
Everybody was involved up through the time they finished high school.
Except Dad, right.
Yeah. When the kids left, the sheep almost left with them. But I happened to come back, and we had sheep for another 15 years or so.
Wow. So what made you decide to go to becoming a native plant nursery?
It was a quick, rich scheme, and most of the quick and the rich went away, and it became a scheme. And we started in 78, and we basically landscaped and grew plants and really didn't become a really native plant nursery until the early 90s. I mean, we grew a lot of natives, and we specialized in natives, but finding my way through that jungle the first 10 years was an interesting challenge.
I'll bet it was. It must give you some appreciation for the average gardener who's trying to do right and trying to plant natives, but if it took you 15 years to wade through the jungle and figure out what was going on, I suppose you have some sympathy for folks who are little clueless about how to do it right.
Well, actually, Mike, it's worse than that. It's really much worse than that. I'm still somewhat clueless. I've been at it for 30 years, and the younger I get, the less I seem to know.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing what goes on out there and what comes up.
Well, when you say that, what do you mean exactly? I mean, you're talking literally when you plant a seed, you don't know what's going to happen, or
no,
what?
You get past that, but you get into the situations of how are they going to respond. And some plants are pretty much rote. In other words, we can pretty well count on them happening. Other plants that we grow, every once in a while, they take a hiesta. And they just sort of take time off, and that's it. I mean, it's sort of like the Bur Oak get together once in a while, a big convention in the springtime, and say no sex this year. And there's no acorns over the entire northern part of the state into Wisconsin and Iowa. I mean, it's just like that's done. And they do it about once every 4 or 5 years. So,
but this past year was not that. This was a mast year.
Right. It was decent. We've had bigger.
So it wasn't a mast year?
Well, a mast in the sense that, yeah, there were trees that produced acorns, but we've had years where almost every tree produces acorns. And in the years that they don't produce acorns, we can look at thousands of trees and generally find maybe one that produces acorns. For some reason, it was out of sync with the rest of them. No idea why.
So scientists still, and people like you, people in the business still are not really sure why that happens.
Not a clue. Yeah. I mean, we think it's weather related, but it doesn't necessarily seem to hang on that either.
Mm-hmm.
It's just something they do, you know, and they all do it every year. Somebody doesn't produce, and they don't produce not just in pockets but all over.
Well, speaking of producing things from trees, we've got Bill calling in from Harvard, Illinois. Bill, you're on the Mike Novak Show, and I understand you have some walnut tree tips.
I do. I took a couple of tree classes at MCC, McHenry County College, and we spent like a week on the walnuts. And
probably because they cause so much trouble.
Yeah, I'm guessing so. That we spent quite a bit of time on the trees and how the roots and that toxin affected other plants.
Mm-hmm.
And my comment was to pay attention to the drip line of the tree and maybe keep your garden out of that drip line, because not only the roots produce it, but the seed has a whole lot of the toxin in it.
Yeah, you know, that was one of the things when Joe called earlier that I was wondering, you know, if he said that his containers were affected, I was wondering whether seeds or leaves or parts of the tree, because from what I understand, all parts of the tree have the juglone.
That's what I had learned in class there.
Yeah.
It's interesting to go beyond that. People with horses cannot have juglones in any of the bedding that they put down. It creates a problem for the horses. So it goes even beyond when it's dead.
So, what were your tips then?
My tip was pretty much to keep it out of the drip line of the tree and make sure you pay attention to where those seeds are landing. I mean, if the seeds were landing anywhere near his garden, that would, you know, even if it was in the 5-gallon bucket, that could affect the plant quite a bit.
Yeah. So, well, then that's a really good point. Keep it out of the drip line. I tell you what, Bill, for calling in with that tip. And so you did a whole week of courses at up in McHenry, and that was sort of what came out of it, get out of the drip line?
Yeah, I had an awesome teacher. His name was Bruce, and he taught me so much about trees. I have a Forest Trees of Illinois book, and that's my bathroom reading. It is the best book I've ever owned.
I love a guy who's got a tree book in the bathroom for the casual reading. Do you have a subscription to Chicagoland Gardening Magazine?
I do not.
Would you like one?
I would love it.
All right, you got it. Hang on. Talk to Heather. We will get you that information. And thanks for the call, Bill.
Cool. Yep. Thank you, Mike.
Have a great Sunday.
Goodbye.
This is the Mike Novak Show, and Connor Shaw is in the studio with me. I need to take a short break here, Mr. Connor, and we will continue the discussion. One of the things that we wanted to get to was the whole idea of where the industry is going at the moment and how tough it is to be in horticulture. In fact, if my buddy Dan Costa is listening, I know he's got lots of opinions. He works up at Vern Goer's greenhouse in Hinsdale, and he's always got opinions about this. So we will. Oh, and he gave me he sent me something last week. Rick DeMaio, when he was healthy, was on the show. And said that there was a neighbor who had a wreath on the door, and it was really beginning to smell awful. And he was trying to figure out what to do. And Heather and I speculated, well, they put a lot of eucalyptus in it. And Dan wrote to me, and he said, nah, it's probably juniper. And that stuff is starting to go. So I'm wondering, you look a little dubious there, Connor.
No, I've had juniper and wreaths. I've smelled it when you cut it, and you know, and when you're in close proximity to it. But I've never had it go to the point of stinking.
Hmm.
So I'm guessing it was some sort of fruit was on there that was frozen and thawed, and rotted, and starting to rot.
Maybe that's what happened. But that was Dan Costa last week sent me an email, and he said he thought it might be juniper. So we got to get Rick when he gets
well
to take a snipping and put it in a little plastic bag.
Oh,
and
sure, it'll
send
be gone
it to
by then.
Oh, of course it will.
I'm sure.
All
and
right.
You'd hope, right? And we took our holiday decorations down finally.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd hope that the stinky Yule wreath is now gone since the Yule is over.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, we still don't have an answer. If you want a couple of tickets to the Mayoral Forum this Wednesday at the downtown Marriott, this is an easy question. Who was Chicago's first mayor? In fact, there's a street named after him. Of course, you know it's a guy, so that's not giving anything away by saying it's a guy, a man.
I believe in looking at the list, there was only one female Chicago mayor thus far, and we all know who the one was.
Yeah, that's not so difficult.
I did hear a rumor, though, that part of the reason she did not win her reelection was that the Blues Brothers movie cost too much money and damage, and she allowed them to kind of...
Take over the city. Well, but that's because Mayor Daley Sr. didn't allow movie making at all in town.
Right. Oh, and that movie was huge for this city.
Yeah.
Huge. That's like the coolest movie ever made.
I know so many actors who still continue to make livings off of playing the Blues Brothers.
Uh-huh.
I mean, this is when people come to town in Chicago and they do an event. They're always hiring actors to play the Blues Brothers. These, you know, all you need is a guy who's kind of tall and a guy who's kind of pudgy, and put them next to each other in dark suits and white shirts and ties and fedoras, and you got the Blues Brothers. There you go.
Have them, you know, mime Sam and Dave songs as best they can.
Exactly, and that's exactly what they do.
Yeah.
I mean, this is it's a cottage industry, yeah, in Chicago.
Side shoot though, Paul McCartney's 30th birthday, John Belushi came and did his John Cocker impression and did with
Joe Cocker.
John, oh my God, wake up, Heather. Get by a little help from my friends. And I said that had to be the coolest. You know, you get a clown or a magician or whatever at your birthday party. John Belushi would be the way to go. For sure.
Especially now.
Oh, no, not
now.
So much now.
That
I don't know. There's
really
no equivalent.
Cool.
There's no equivalent to him not. These days.
No. They're wannabes.
Oh, yeah, but they're not. They don't hold a candle. We miss you, John.
Here's a tip from the care of trees. Are you aware that winter is an excellent time to prune your trees? One of the reasons is that winter pruning can slow the spread of diseases such as Dutch elm disease and oak wilt, and even an infestation of emerald ash borer. Why? Well, the tree's dormant, and it's less likely to produce running sap that attracts disease-carrying insects. In addition, pruning can also help reduce snow and ice damage to trees that are prone to this kind of damage. Birches, for instance, can be devastated by snow and ice if not pruned on a regular basis to help improve their structure. Make the care of trees your permanent partner in enhancing the value of your landscape. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the certified arborist at the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220, the Care of Trees. Their business is people and their love for trees.
Hey gardeners, want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
We're almost 3 weeks into the new year. So, have you finished planting this year's garden? No? Why not? Sorry.
That's why they're listening to you now. They're planting their gardens now.
And I apologize. I get tense during the winter, like a lot of gardeners in Zone 5. And if you're tense, you should get a massage or get your hands on Chicagoland Gardening Magazine. The January-February issue is out, and it's the annual garden planning edition, complete with three holes punched in the side, so you can throw it into your binder and refer to it all year long. Our very own Beth Botts has an article with 8 tips for planting a successful garden if you've never done it before. Since this is the season for indoor plants, there's a story about how to keep them alive and happy. And near and dear to my heart, my buddy Michelle Byrne Walsh tells you how to grow an organic lawn. There's even my column on the inside back page. Reading it is like being massaged with shredded hardwood mulch. You can purchase Chicagoland Gardening Magazine on newsstands all over Chicago. Better yet, get a subscription. Call 888-265-3600, 888-265-3600, or go to chicagolandgardening.com.
Unchain my heart, baby, let me be. 'Cause you don't care. Well, please set me free. Unchain my heart.
Well, you mentioned the word Joe Cocker,
and you deliver,
and I deliver.
I love you.
Gotta have it. Although the original is,
oh yeah,
it's a,
I still can't believe I just said John. I'm really must be tired.
That's what? It's Sunday morning.
It's Sunday morning.
You not being tired? It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk AM and FM. We're talking a little bit about native plants. We're talking a little bit about the business with Connor Shaw from Possibility Place Nursery in Moenie, who is here in the studio, and I know, and we'll when we let Connor go, you and I, Heather, will talk about the debate over the one seed Chicago. They're having a vote, Connor, at one seed Chicago. They pick 3 plants each year at the beginning of the year, and you vote for the seed, and then when you vote, you get a packet of the winning seeds, and this year it's vegetables. And it's the contest is among radishes, eggplant, and Swiss chard. And There's no contest. Definitely Swiss chard.
I beg to differ.
Swiss chard is...
No.
Is
chard schmard. Radish.
I don't know if you've gone to my website and seen...
I have. Hence the bring up of said subject.
I mean, it's all like, the slogans are there.
You're like ramming Swiss chard down their throats.
It's not hard to love Swiss chard.
Is it chard or shard?
I second that.
Thank you,
Swiss
Kyle.
Chard. Swiss
really?
Chard.
I'm all about the radish. I'm sorry. It's robust, it's hearty, it's delicious, it's red and spicy. How could you not like it?
It's charred part.
No.
So, but you can vote by going to 1seatchicago.com. Go to my website, I got the link, and you'll see my campaign to stuff the ballot box and get Swiss chard elected. So we'll do more on that later. You and I were talking, every time we get together, Connor, we talk about... Somehow it always goes over to the state of the business. And as I mentioned at the top of the show, the horticultural business has been hurting in the last couple of years. And one of the things that has come up recently is the grower Monrovia, which produces a lot of different kinds of plants, and then sells them to independent garden centers who sell them to the public. It's been pressured by its banks, and I've got the story up on my website. Basically, the banks are saying, raise $20 million extra dollars by the end of January or else, whatever the or else is.
I don't know if you read about Heinz. Heinz is pretty much in serious trouble. Carolina Nurseries is gone. So there's a number of very large nurseries that have taken this recession on the chin, and it has stomped them pretty tough. It's tough.
Well, it is. It's a tough business because, as I said, I think one of the things that happens is that people cut back on certain things, as you know, and it's as if the plants you grow are, a luxury, you know?
And I think that's right. They're put in luxury mode.
Which may be a reason to grow vegetables because it's less of a luxury if you can eat it, I suppose. But one of the things that Monrovia has said it might have to do is sell to the box stores, which it hasn't done in the past. And that's, you know, every year in Chicago there's a convention called the Independent Garden Center. Well, it just started a couple of years ago, but the Independent Garden Center conference, gets together in August, and it's places.
It's a trade show.
Yeah. And it's the non-box stores, basically, who sell plants. And it's a big deal to them if a major supplier starts selling to the Walmarts and the Home Depots of the world, isn't it?
Yes, very much so. It sort of takes the exclusivity out of the... out of the retail garden centers and puts it as across the entire country in box stores.
It's interesting, though, because one of the things I found is on a site that I've talked about on the show many times, Garden Rant, and my friend Amy Stewart, who's an author and who's been on the show a number of times, wrote an article about the Monrovia thing, and she said, memo to the banks. Who are pressuring Monrovia. Selling your products in a box store only drives down prices and quality, leading a race to the bottom that will not help the company. Just saying, she writes. And that's really, it's interesting because it is sort of a death spiral at that point, isn't it?
It can be, although some have been successful at it. But the vast majority, I'm guessing, have had very difficult times in that arena. You know, they're paid only as the plant goes out the door in general, and it's a difficult task. You got to keep your plants healthy and good looking, and you only get paid when they leave. So, and who's watching the store while you're not there?
So, what's interesting about this whole thing is that Monrovia sent out a letter and said, "Yeah, we're in trouble. We got to sell these plants." Well, 75 independent garden centers stepped up and said, "Okay, we'll do it. We'll buy the plants, and you know, help you raise that capital." The problem is who's going to buy it from them, you know?
Well, and then, you know, how many times do they have to go to the well, too?
Right. I mean, if you do it now, it's just going to happen every year?
Yeah. And if it works, it's a great sales ploy. I mean,
yeah, but it seems like it's one time that you can do this,
right? I would think so. Yeah. I would hope so.
Yeah. Let's, as I mentioned before, I thought that Dan Costa might give us a call, so let's bring him in. Dan from Vern Goer's Greenhouse in Hinsdale. How you doing, Dan?
Oh, pretty good. I got a cold too, so sorry if I sound a little scratchy.
That's okay. Just stay away from me, okay? Yeah. What do you hear that you wanted to comment on? Because I know you'll have some kind of comment.
Well, first, the reed thing, the juniper that they grow commercially in the Pacific Northwest for Christmas greens.
Yeah.
I know this because I've done Christmas greens for 11 years. You bring that inside and warm it up, and it smells like your cat litter box. It's a stinky green.
A stinky green, okay. And what about the business? What are you seeing, Dan?
Business is very slow.
I had one guy, and I will tell you, and I think I mentioned it on the show before, he says his business is off by 90% over the past couple of years. Now, I'm not sure 90% compared to what, but still, the point he was making is that it's a rough go right now.
My boss told me a few weeks back what we're down since September 11th tragedy, and it was an amazing number.
You mean since 2001?
Yeah, it's been a slow slide. Yeah, that's steepening every year now.
So what you're saying is that it's really not just the crash of the economy in the past couple of years.
From our records, it started back then.
What about you, Connor?
It didn't start until the crash. And most of the industry, ball and burlap and all of that, really didn't start until the crash.
Yeah, once we had the crash, it steepened it considerably.
Yeah, I agree 100%.
That was basically a tragedy for the industry.
Mm-hmm.
But, the week before Christmas, with Christmas being on a weekend, I thought that we were going to be very busy selling poinsettias. The parking lot would be full, and most of the time the parking lot was actually empty.
Well,
people didn't even come in for that.
Wow.
Scares me about what they're going to do in the spring.
Well, last year was interesting because, 2 years ago, spring was awful. Because it rained the whole time and it was cold, and all I could hear from the garden centers was them complaining about how bad the weather is and it's killing us. Last year, April got off to a gangbuster start. It was warm, sunny, and then things kind of petered out. I think a lot of the business thought it was going to take off, and it really didn't.
We're involved a lot in plant sales, and 2 years ago the plant sales really tapered off dramatically. Last year there was a slight pickup, but even that being said, it's nowhere near what it was the previous time.
Yeah, we had the same experience with plant sales. They've really dropped.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about that the other day, it's, I don't think it's only like Home Depot and Walmart and them guys, but nowadays we got the computer. People can sit down at their computer and they can buy their garden basically online, which is not helping the independent local guys. But in the long run, they're not getting the same plant that they would have if they got in their car and went to the local independent.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you what, we got one more person who's in the business, so let's bring him in. He's been on the show a couple of times recently, J.R. Rizzi, Rizzi's Garden Center. How you doing, J.R.?
Good morning, Mike.
And you wanted to add to the conversation.
Well, yes, I think everybody's making a great point. When we say business is down, the thing that I see, I'm seeing the dilution factor. It's just there's so many places that everybody can walk in and just grab one, and they don't think they're doing any they don't think they're doing any harm. Oh, I'll get a couple 1 gallon pots, I'm here. We'll go to Gore's next week. We'll go to Pasquazi's next week. We'll go to Sid's next week or Rizzi's but they take two pots here and they take two pots over there and they take and then they expect us to be there. When they have problems or they need good stuff.
Well, actually, exactly. Dan and I have talked about this many times, and I've said this on the show, are you really getting your money's worth when you go to a box store? Because you don't get any knowledge from that. It's a commodity at that point. Whereas, you know, if I walk in to talk to Connor Shaw, I'm going to learn something, or talk to Dan Costa or J.R. Rizzi. But folks, they're looking on the short side, you know, thing. They don't look to the future and what happens if these places disappear. But you make a good point, JR. Are there too many garden centers?
Too many garden center, professional independent garden centers? I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think there's always room for a good independent garden center that's going to, you know, be full service and take care of anybody. Is there, you know, has the growers, you know, there's been many times at different shows and everything that I'll get into heated arguments with fellow growers, because we do produce and grow quite a bit of material, that, you know, what business does, you know, what business does Bob's gas station have to sell flats of flowers? What business does Mary Jane's something, you know, have a right to, you know, buy a half a truckload of hanging baskets?
I see your point, but you can't prohibit them from doing that. What you have to do is educate your consumer and say, maybe that's not where you want to get your plants, you know, at the gas station.
Well, so. I think that's part of it, but also just, you know, to have some integrity, to have some, you know, on the growers end to say, look, at, you know, these people will do the right job. You know, maybe we won't sell them, or maybe there'll be a chain of, you know, a chain of command. Why don't you go to the independent garden center? We ship them every week, and I'm sure they'll give you a discount if you're going to buy that many. But it's the almighty dollar, and it is, you know, like a lot of these guys, they crack, you know.
Well, and the other thing that's happening this week, of course, is Mid-Am at Navy Pier, and Connor, you were on the board of Mid-Am, and I suppose this is a conversation that's going to be going on a lot at the show this week.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Definitely. And Mid-Am is basically done on the premise of for landscapers and independent garden centers, and there has been a slow decline in all trade shows, and Mid-Am is in part of that group. As a matter of fact, we've declined to the part that we used to be. We were in the past at Navy Pier, and then we went over to the larger
McCormick place,
and then we're back at Navy Pier. So
does that represent that contracting of the industry?
Right. Well, you got a contracting of the industry. You got downsizing. A lot of guys came in and put in huge booths. Now they're putting in smaller booths. You know, there's a whole talk about, you know, where are trade shows, what are they doing, and so we sort of got to redefine ourselves and try to get ideas out there and try to make it a little more exciting for people to participate in.
And I guess word again, and we got to wrap this up, but is also to consumers. You know, obviously part of it's marketing on the part of the businesses. If you don't have a good marketing strategy, you're not attracting business. So maybe it's incumbent upon the people in the business to be smarter about how they market and let the consumer know that if you lose us, you lose a great deal. And I don't think that the consumer necessarily understands that at this point.
I think it's necessary that we promote our information.
No, Mike, yes.
Wait, hold on, JR. Dan, what was that?
I think it's necessary for us to promote our informational side a lot to people to get them to start, you know, getting more in the habit again of coming to the independents instead of picking one up when they're at the grocery store or the hardware or home center.
Yeah, and JR, I'll let you have the final word on this. JR?
Yes, sir.
Did you have something you wanted to add?
Well, just to the consumer end, if you want us to be there for the special things, you know, try, you know, don't dilute us, you know, but you come.
Well, if you want us to be there for the special things, come for the regular things, too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, guys, thank you so much for joining the conversation, and I'll talk to both of you guys real soon.
Glad to do it, Mike.
Take care now. Connor, thanks for coming up to the studio. Appreciate
it.
You're welcome anytime, and we can, you know, discuss this anytime you want to, because I'm sure there will be more conversations about it. Here, let's see, the holidays now are a distant bad memory, but the gardening season is a distant bad premonition. So what do you do in between if you like plants? How about making some of those neglected indoor plants happy? Green plants are known for removing carbon dioxide from the air, but they can also filter harmful toxins and pollutants as well. Well, if they're working for you, you should be working for them by picking up soil mixes and fertilizers for every kind of plant at SID's Greenhouses, one of those great independent garden centers that we were just talking about. SID's also has one of Chicagoland's largest assortment of decorative pots and pottery, so your plants serve form as well as function. Of course, in case you need any replacements, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants as well. And here's a tip. Cut back on the watering during the winter, especially if you dial back your thermostat. And you have less than 2 weeks to take advantage of SID's poinsettia trade-in. Now through February 1st, take, well, your poinsettia plant to SID's and get 25% off a shiny new tropical plant. SID's, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Looking for a housing investment that can pay big dividends? Remodel your kitchen or bathroom. You'll freshen up your home and add value to it, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for all your remodeling needs. Kitchens, bathrooms, master suites, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
All right. In the second hour, as I mentioned, we're going to talk permaculture. Susan has called in. Hang on, Susan. We're going to get to you. She's won the first pair of tickets to see the mayoral forum. I keep wanting to say debate. They call it a forum. Next Wednesday, the 19th, and we're going to be giving away more of those tickets on the show today. We've got more questions, and we may just throw them out there because we got tickets and we want people to show up and encourage the candidates to speak honestly. And more on the great One Seed Chicago debate coming up.
The Mike Novak Show is brought to you by The Care of Trees, our business's people and their love for trees, and by SID's Greenhouses, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, and by WRD Environmental, creating sustainable landscapes for today and tomorrow. Here he is again, Mike Novak.
I listen to this song and I feel instantly better.
Isn't it wonderful?
I would play this song every day if I...
It's a one-hit wonder, but it's a good one.
Yeah, great one-hit wonder. It's a Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. Lots going on today. I got a bad feeling about the Bears. But
don't say that. I wore. You didn't even say anything about my clothes.
Yeah, well, I know because they're.
It doesn't make sense on the radio, but.
But your clothes are hurting my eyes.
They are not.
They are hurting my eyes.
It's orange, isn't it?
Yes, it's
this is authentic from Mexico, by the way.
And they're huge Bear fans down there.
I know. I'm wearing a serape that a friend of mine brought back from Mexico for me that is bright orange and navy blue. How many inches do you think that C emblem there is?
Oh my God! It's the size.
Six.
It's the size of a football.
The C on my stomach, basically, because it's too big for my chest, is about the size of a football. It says
the,
Bears.
The reason the thing drapes down to your knee,
it's
your ankles.
It's a serape. It's a real serape from Mexico. If I'm saying that correctly, I'm not sure, but
maybe it's syrupy.
I don't think so.
That's what she's wearing.
But I assure you, nobody else has this one on today. I mean, I'm working the football mojo. Got my Bear sweatshirt on underneath.
I still got a bad... You know, I said to somebody the other day, the Bears are in a unique position here this week, which is they could be beaten twice in the same season by a college team. Isn't that amazing?
We're going to talk college football? Really? You really want to go down the college football route there, do you, Mr. Novak?
No. I'm telling you. I'm just saying. I mean, you can't hurt my feelings about it. I moved on. I have moved. It's 2011. I'm moving on. All right. I'm all about the future.
I am a huge Chicago sports fan, so I'm
all right.
I'm
let's get a weather forecast here because Rick DeMaio wasn't here. Let's see. Cloudy today with a high near 24. You know, it's not even really what they call bears weather. It's just winter in Chicago.
Bears weather is coming in the next few weeks.
Yeah, but they won't be. It'll be when they play the Packers at the Soldier Field. I mean, you even before, and I have to get back to, you know, horticultural talk, but even before the Bears lost to Green Bay in the last game of the season, we all saw it coming. We said, this is what's going to happen. Green Bay's going to win twice. They're going to end up in the NFC Championship game is going to be at Soldier Field against the Packers. I mean, and that's what the networks would love.
Oh, God, yes.
They're
salivating for
so
it.
So praying that it's going to, because if it's Seattle and Green Bay.
No one cares.
No. No, nobody cares.
Nope.
And all of this is for the right to be a bridesmaid to the New England Patriots. So.
Oh, I am so sick of
Am I the worst fair weather
you
fan
are.
Ever?
You're terrible.
Yeah, I am terrible. Okay, back to the forecast. Yep. 24 the high today. Tonight cloudy, low around 19. Calm winds becoming south, southeast between 10 to 15. Tomorrow, which is the holiday, ML King Day. And of course, I'm working.
Me too.
Yeah. Snow likely, mainly afternoon. Cloudy with a high near 31. Let's see. Chance of precipitation, 70%. New snow accumulation, 1 to 3 inches possible. Monday night, snow, freezing rain, and sleet. Freezing rain, sleet. Before midnight, then areas of snow and freezing drizzle. Low around 28. Yikes. Chance of precipitation, 80%.
And it just seems to steadily get lower as the week progresses.
The chance of, 30% chance of snow on Tuesday, 30% chance of snow before midnight on Tuesday night, partly sunny on Wednesday, and then at the end of the week, yikes. High near 16 on Thursday, low around 1, high near 11 on Friday. So it starts out snowy and then just gets downright cold at the end of the week. So that's my Rick DeMaio impersonation for the week. Who have we got on the line there?
Oh, we have Susan.
Susan!
Hello!
Good morning.
You guys are adorable.
Aww.
I mean it. May I add a comment?
Sure.
A complimentary comment. Maybe I ought to quickly say that.
I appreciate that.
The It's a Wonderful Life is a movie that I'm, can take or leave. Your rendering of that was wonderful.
Thank you.
Just wonderful. You and Heather both.
Aww.
I just want to compliment you on that. So.
You call every week, Susan.
I will.
Please call every week. And you have the, are you a Chicago resident?
I am.
And who was Chicago's first mayor?
Well, it was, you threw a curve. At first when you said street, I thought a streeter. But it's William Butler Ogden. And you asked for some bonus information.
Yeah.
He was only mayor for a year at the most. It was 1837 to 1838.
Wow.
I didn't count the months or whatever.
Okay.
And we weren't looking for that.
Yeah. I think he was a Democrat, it looked like.
Ding, ding, ding.
Wow, yeah. You got them all. Okay, we got to throw something extra her way. Do you ever get down to SIDS?
No.
Are you not a gardener?
No, I'm not. Oh. I'm listening to you because I so enjoy... I get such a kick out of you. And, of course, CPT, the best station on
Yay! Oh, we want Susan to call every day.
Yes, I know. what can we give her that... I know. The book. Yes. This I've been holding on to these for months. Do you cook?
Well, no, but I love books. I'm like a real loser here.
No.
I'm a reader.
You're a loser.
a book or your are you? This is so
go ahead, beg.
Magazine that you write for?
Oh, yeah. Okay, let's get her a subscription. She's got online gardening.
Because even though I don't garden, I love flowers. You know, and you. You know, you're on the back cover there. Hey, that is a good place to be. That's a compliment.
I think, I hope it is.
It is. Okay. It is.
We like her.
I like her a lot. I want her on the staff, all right? We need to put her on the staff. Susan, all right, we'll send you copy of Chicagoland Gardening Magazine.
And your tickets.
And
you'll be on the will call list.
You're on
the
will call list. Show up at 6 o'clock, please, for the event next Wednesday. And, you know, I've been looking. I noticed that that the candidates are backpedaling now because yesterday there was a forum where not only did Rahm not show up, but Gary Chico didn't show up.
Oh, how dare they?
See, Rahm's been using that as a strategy. He just wants the TV cameras there. He doesn't want to debate unless the TV cameras are there. And now it looks like Gary Chico's doing the same thing. As for Wednesday, well, all of the candidates except Rahm have said they will be on hand. It would be nice if Rahm came because it's about community and the environment, and I'd love to hear his statement. And by the way, last week, as you know, I interviewed Howard Lerner and Jerry Adelman about the questionnaire that was put out by the 17 environmental groups. Well, the candidates have responded, and the results are coming out this Tuesday.
Mm.
So I am going to post those on my website on Tuesday when the responses come out. And then maybe talk about those next week. So it comes out the day before this event on Wednesday. So, Susan, hang on. We will get the information for you. And thank you so much for listening, and thanks for calling.
You're very welcome.
Okay, and we have to do another question. So let's give away more tickets to the event. And I'm going to go to an environmental question. And this is a really cool one. And Heather put these together. And I don't know where you found all these, but they're awesome. Question number 5 here, for instance. At the Chicago Zoological Society's Brookfield Zoo, they use dung from what animal family? And it's the only dung they use in composting. So at the Brookfield Zoo, what is the only kind of dung that is used in composting? If you've got the answer to that, I will give you a couple of I'll tell you what, if you wanted 4 tickets, I'll give you 4 tickets to the Chicago Mayoral Forum on Community and Environmental Issues this Wednesday, January 19th. 2 days before my birthday, by the way. That's just a heads up to let everybody know my birthday's Friday because I... Heather, I should let you know because the station is going to be flooded. Oh, she's getting people on the phone here. The station's going to be flooded with gifts coming in. So since Heather's at the front desk here.
Here I am. Sorry, I was getting your guests online for you.
Yeah.
But I found the Brookfield Zoo question. That's probably the hardest question on the questionnaire.
I don't think it is.
Really?
No, I don't think it is.
Because I did not find the information on their website.
Well, wait a second. All right. Well, so that's a hint. Don't go to their website. You're not going to. So you might want to take a good guess. 773-838-9278. If you, and we got people calling in.
They're coming. Here they come.
They will do that. So while we're waiting for some answers to that question, let's go to line 2. Bring in Ron and Vicky Nowicki. How are you guys doing?
We're great. How are you, Mike?
I'm fine.
Hi, Mike.
You know, this reminds me. I'm sorry to say this. It reminds me of the days back when I worked at Gargantua Radio down the dial, and on the Christmas show, I would talk to Mom and Dad.
Oh.
You know, and they would be on the extension line. And, you know. So it's kind of like talking to Mom and Dad again.
Oh, Mikey.
Oh, Vicky.
We just can't wait for you to come home for a visit.
Oh, stop it. Stop it.
I got your favorite pancakes already.
Stop it. You'd have to say kapusta, my favorite kapusta.
What the heck is that?
You see, there you go. Wait a second. You're a Nowicki. How do you not know what? I mean, in fact, there were Nowickis in my family, and we pronounce it Nowitzki.
Nowitzki.
That's correct.
Bonnie, except all right.
Come over for a gawumpki.
There we go. Do you fix those?
We fix the gawumpkis, yes.
Are they organic?
Of course. What do you think? Do you have to ask?
No, you're right. And Ron and Vicky have been, you guys are such leaders in the industry in terms of having figured things out so long ago.
We are monoliths.
Monoliths?
Yes.
Okay.
No, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Okay, good. I wasn't going to go down that road. But they run a couple of businesses. One is called the Land Office, and you work out of Downers Grove, and you're in your place in Downers Grove. I love the quote that Bill Wilson used for you. He calls you the poster children for suburban permaculture design.
Okay.
That's I found it somewhere online, I think it's on your website. And I love that, though, because you are the poster children for permaculture design. So maybe...
Hey, Ron, we should make a big poster.
Okay.
Okay.
With the two of you. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you make it look like American Gothic. Okay. And a couple of businesses they run are the Land Office. There's a link to it on my website. And Liberty Gardens. Yeah. And both of them are about sustainability. Liberty Gardens is more about growing vegetables and incorporating them into the landscape. But that's something you've done for 30 years. How did this all get started with you guys?
Well, you know, a lot of it started with the protest movements back in the 60s, the first Earth Day. I'm a landscape architect, and I had the good fortune to have an associate professor who was very strongly environmentally connected, and he passed that on to us.
And you're right. You're kind of lucky because this was before this was really on anybody's radar.
That's right.
Remember 1970, though, there was a big environmental movement back then, and we kind of had a relapse, and now we're trying to get it started again.
Well, you know,
then and now.
Well, this 1970, first Earth Day.
Right.
Yeah, and it
and
was
Ron
a big deal.
And kept it going, but a lot of us sort of, relapsed.
Yeah,
and
I was introduced to the Club of Rome report back then, the limits to growth. And that was pretty much ignored by most people. But I said, well, hey, there's something to this. And we need to fundamentally change the way we live if we care about future generations. So that's what we did.
It just made common sense.
Well, it did to you, but why didn't it to many other people? You know, it made sense to you, but this was at a time when I wouldn't say the use of synthetic chemicals was necessarily increasing, but it was becoming solidified in our culture.
Mm-hmm.
I know this, 1970 was, 8 years after Silent Spring by Rachel Carson, but even with the advent of the EPA, a lot of people weren't thinking in terms of organics in their backyards. You know, I think they thought of it in the larger realm and say, well, you know, the big companies need to back off, but I'm still going to go for the weed and feed in my yard. But that's something you guys...
I don't think it was a conscious choice, though. And I don't know how much time we have to talk about it, but I think the divergence really happened in the 40s when Aldo Leopold was writing, and he coined the phrase ecology late as the 40s, at the exact same time as all these synthetic chemicals were coming in. And today we have 80,000 untested synthetic chemicals in our environment that never were there before. We have no idea what effect they're having on us, but they, permeate throughout our environment, our food, and carpets, our furniture.
We have a history of doing that. We unleash these chemicals. We test them poorly, if at all. And one of the things that I've discovered in my studies over the last few years is even worse. We don't test how each of those chemicals interacts with others.
Right. Exactly.
I mean, the EPA may test for 2,4-D, but it doesn't tell you how 2,4-D reacts with dicamba.
No.
Right.
And then
the work of Aldo Leopold, I think, and his land ethic, I think, really led to Earth Day because it unleashed a whole series of questions about the environment and how all of us, including the land and the waters and the creatures, are related to each other.
And those were exciting times. I mean, there was right. the Vietnam War protests. There was the beginning of the EPA.
And the feminist movement.
Oh, man, it was just incredible and all that.
Don't you go getting all nostalgic about that.
No, I'm just saying two divergent movements.
Yeah, but you know, the point I guess I was making, which is interesting, is that, yeah, those were exciting times and people were just beginning to have a sense of some of these issues. And yet, at that time, the vast majority of Americans were still buying the whole chemical line.
Right.
Well, I think it's the power of the corporations, which got bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, I have a statistic here. In 1970, the entire expense of our health care system was $75 billion. Now, they're projecting that if we keep going the way we're going with our industrial food system, which, you know, every swallow of the food that we eat from industrial food contains pesticides, antibiotics, drug residues, pathogens, feces, hormone-disrupting chemicals, toxic sludge, slaughterhouse waste, genetically modified organisms, chemical additives, chemical byproducts, blah, 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 hazardous allergens and so forth. And if we keep going at that rate, by 2016, our healthcare system will be spending $4.1 trillion. And that has all happened since 1970. And it's directly correlated to the, well, I don't want to get started on that, but these multinational corporations getting involved with it.
I just got tweeted here online.
Uh-oh, Monsanto?
No.
We don't follow them on Twitter.
No. They may be following me. I don't know.
They're listening without really listening.
My Skinny Garden writes, I'm reading Silent Spring now, and I'm pretty convinced that we're all doomed.
No.
Well, you know, Vicki's talking about the health issues involved in the chemicals, but the permaculture essentially overall is a quality of life movement.
Right.
It has to do with energy, food, water, health, agriculture. It's all encompassing.
And that's a great segue because the whole point of you being here is that you're
right.
teaching this course at the Morton Arboretum next Saturday, January 22nd. And you're doing it with Bill Wilson, who's been on the show several times. He's with Midwest Permaculture, and this is what they do. And he's down in Stell, Illinois, where a permaculture community has been created. And he's been doing this for decades as well.
Mm-hmm.
So what can we expect, Ron, from you and Bill at the course, which you call Living Off and With the Land? And by the way, I have a couple people on hold here. Fred, going to get to you in a second. And Megan Dunning from the Morton Arboretum. You hang on because I want to talk to her also about what's going on there. Fred has the answer to our latest question. So Living Off and With the Land, what's that about, Ron?
Well, that's basically what we've been doing for 30 years. We started here with an empty lot, designed a passive solar home, and, you know, it was a long list of things that we did to make it energy efficient. And we had a no-lawn landscape where we grow most of our food here. We've increased biodiversity. We use the water that hits the site and retain it on the site in various methods. This is all common sense stuff that people have forgotten about. And in the process, we reconnected with the natural world. We made a central choice, I think, in the very beginning to cooperate with and nurture the natural world rather than dominate and control. It's like the difference between war and peace.
I like that.
There's a difference. I didn't realize that.
So, you know, Dennis Kucinich says, let's have a Department of Peace. Well, I think we should make the NRA a part of the government. the Natural Reconciliation Administration.
Oh, that's good.
Whose goal would be to reconnect people with the larger community that gives life to us all.
And that is sort of the whole point of permaculture. As I said earlier, it's kind of organics on steroids, because it's not just about the plants you grow, but it's about the fauna as well. It's about the natural resources and how you try to reduce your footprint to the point of zero.
But yeah, you know, and also it's seeing ourselves as part of a community rather than seeing the natural world as resources that we can exploit to exhaustion.
Yeah.
And it's just a different attitude. It's a different paradigm, and it's incredibly, incredibly rewarding.
That's Ron Nowicki. Vicki is also on the phone. Next week, Ron and Bill Wilson from Midwest Permaculture are doing a talk called Living Off and With the Land at the Morton Arboretum. All the information's at my website, mikenovak.net. You can link to the Morton Arboretum there and sign up for the course. It's 4 hours. What is it? One to five or
1 to 5?
One to five on Saturday afternoon next week. I'm going to get to Megan Dunning, who's with the Community Education Outreach at Morton Arboretum in just a second. I got to take a quick break, but I also wanted to quickly, and this is an interruption here, guys. Hang on, but you know, it's my radio show. I go, I occasionally go off on tangents, so I want to bring in Fred from Oak Lawn. Hi, Fred. You're on the Mike Novak Show.
It's Fran.
Fran, yeah. Oh, okay.
So, no good lazy man that I am, I'm lying in bed going through catalogs.
Seed catalogs?
And I don't know where in God's name the answer came, but somewhere in the deep, dark recesses of my brain, I thought elephant dung, and I don't know where I got it.
You are absolutely right.
What
the question was, at the Chicago Zoological Society's Brookfield Zoo, what animal family's dung is the only dung they use in composting? And it's pachyderms, elephants, hippopotamus, tapir, and rhinoceros. Heather, where'd you find this?
I actually spoke with an employee at the Buildings and Grounds office at the Brookfield Zoo.
And I'll tell you something. I know this because a few years ago, back when I was at Gargantua Radio down the dial, Kathy O'Malley and I, the circus was in town. And they will give you elephant dung if you go and pick it up.
Nice.
And we did.
They don't have any elephants there.
Do they not have elephants there
now?
Well,
I guess another caller said that the zoos removed the elephants. I was unaware of.
Yeah, they don't have any.
And they just built them a new pen like a year or two ago because my son and I are avid fans of the zoo.
Oh, uh-huh. That's a great zoo.
Yeah.
I used to work there.
Did you really?
Why did they remove the elephants?
I don't know.
Yeah,
well,
we'll have to find that out next
week.
We got to
do a little research.
I will.
Every time we answer one question, five more come
up.
But
yeah, it's elephants, hippopotamus, tapir, and rhinoceros were the breeds of pachyderms that were in the pachyderm house.
And because the consistency of the dung is very solid yet malleable.
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful.
And the animals have an all-vegetarian diet, which is better for the soil and safer for use all around the park. So there you go. Now, wait a second, Fran, you're in Oak Lawn, but you want to come see the forum?
Oh, sure.
Okay, great. I mean, I'm not limiting it to citizens of Chicago, so how many tickets do you need?
Well, I'll just be coming by myself.
All right, well, I'll have you talk to Heather, and thank you for answering that question, and I'll put you on hold here, and we will be... all right, time for one more question here. We'll have a few more before the end of the show, because I want to give away even more tickets. Let's see. Shall we do another? Okay, here it is. This is a little bit harder. What's the address and name? It happens to be the name of, also. So this is a clue of the green LEED certified building on the Chicago River that uses river water for its air conditioning system. A system that takes in water from the river, filters it as it passes through the building, and actually pumps the water back into the river cleaner than when it came into the building. All right, just give us the name of the building, which also happens to be the address of the building. These are great questions, Heather.
Thanks.
She kind of went nuts there on me. And we will get back to our conversation with Ron and Vicki Nowicki. And we will bring in Megan Dunning in just a second. But first of all, now I've got to find. We're in the 10 o'clock hour. You don't know what happened this morning, man. It was we were a little out of control before the show, but we're back in control. Now, as we move into 2011, you have no idea what that means. I was just tap dancing while I found the spot. As we move into 2011, you know that there are some green service providers that will once again step up and do special work. One of them is WRD Environmental. You've heard me talk about their involvement in green activities like Greentown, the future of community at the College of Lake County in Grays Lake, Illinois last March. They sponsored the 6th annual Chicago River Summit in June, hosted by Friends of the Chicago River and the Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Speaking of the river, WRD Environmental has been instrumental in developing and maintaining the award-winning and innovative Fish Hotel in the Chicago River for 2 years. And that's not all. WRD Environmental was part of the South Pond Rehabilitation Team, which transformed that part of Lincoln Park from a tired, polluted mud hole into a vibrant showplace for a rebounding ecosystem. And WRD was one of the main sponsors for Mayor Daley's Landscape Awards Ceremony, which celebrates gardening all over the city. You can be sure that WRD is going to be a driving force behind those kinds of initiatives this year, too. For experienced, sustainable landscape development, trust the professionals at WRD Environmental on the web at WRDEnvironmental.com.
Hey, gardeners. Want to be inspired? Make plans to visit Cantini Gardens in Wheaton, the 500-acre former estate of Robert R. McCormick. Cantini isn't just beautiful, it's a horticultural masterpiece. Stroll through the spectacular formal gardens created by renowned landscape architect Franz Lipp and marvel at the sheer variety of annuals, perennials, ground covers, trees, and shrubs. You'll love Cantini's Idea Garden, Rose Garden, and Native Prairie, too. Cantini has something for everyone, including museums, picnic area, gift shop, and restaurants. Plan your visit today at cantini.org.
Here's a tip from the Care of Trees, all or part of 25 Illinois counties, from the Wisconsin state line as far south as Champaign and Vermilion counties, have confirmed or are likely to confirm cases of emerald ash borer. Now, you knew that was coming, and it is happening in Illinois. It's expected that every county in the state will eventually be affected, threatening the state's more than 100 million ash trees. Homeowners and civic leaders asking questions about their own trees and EAB are encouraged to contact a certified arborist like those at the Care of Trees. Certified arborists can assess trees, provide counsel on treatment and next steps, and ensure the safety of home and property should any trees need to be removed. If you're concerned about EAB, call upon the certified arborist at the Care of Trees. Whether you want to make sure all is well with the trees in your yard, you're changing your landscaping, or you're moving, invite the Care of Trees to take a look. See thecareoftrees.com or call 847-394-4220. 847-394-4220. The Care of Trees, their business is people and their love for trees.
Director of Public Relations,
or a 299.
Is available only at the
Gateway. There's no other. Okay.
It's the Mike Novak Show on Chicago's Progressive Talk, AM and FM. We have Ron and Vicki Nowicki on the phone. Before we get back to them and Megan Dunning from the Morton Arboretum, you found an article about that, Heather?
Yes, I did. And it's from September 23rd of 2010 from the Tribune. Brookfield Zoo shipped its lone female elephant, Joyce, to a Six Flag park in New Jersey, who they had her on lend from, for Christy, a 28-year-old female elephant at their zoo. The three staple elephants they had apparently were very quite old, in their late 20s, and passed. So Joyce was sent back to her herd in New Jersey, and now they are currently working on renovating a new elephant indoor habitat and bringing elephants back in the future. But they are right. Currently at Brookfield Zoo, there are no elephants.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I got to tell you, I'm not exactly a zoo fan.
I know. It's a bittersweet experience to go to the zoo for me. It really is. I'm conflicted in many ways when I'm there.
Okay. We've got the question out about what's the name of the building that is in Chicago, and it's for a couple of tickets to see the Mayoral Forum. Let's go to line three, bring in the very patient Megan Dunning from the Morton Arboretum. How you doing, Megan?
Good morning, Mike. I'm doing well. How are you?
Great. And Ron and Vicki, you guys are back here as well.
Yep. I'm Megan.
And
hi, Ron. Hi, Vicki.
So you all have been working together, and you've got a new series. Is this a new series of talks at the Morton Arboretum? What are you trying to do here, Megan?
Absolutely, Mike. We have a whole new series of eco-friendly gardening workshops, and the goal of this series is to put sustainable practices out there for the home landscape so that your average gardener can figure out what to do in their yard to easily take one step closer to a sustainable garden.
And of course, you've got two of the people who've been doing it for years, two of the best people I know to teach that. And of course, Bill Wilson from Midwest Permaculture will be coming up from Stell, Illinois as well. In addition to living off and with the land, what else have you got coming up, Megan?
We've got a whole year of great programs coming up. The next couple of programs in February, we've got a program on adaptable gardens for a changing climate. That's on February 26th with Jerry Maluski from American Gardens. And then in March, we've got a program on plant healthy pruning. So as you're gearing up for spring and trying to figure out what to do with the trees and shrubs in your yard, we'll take you through a bit of how to take care of those trees and shrubs in a little bit safer way.
Both of those are fabulous ideas. I'm interested in that first one, and
yeah.
You know, changing climate and how the average gardener adapts to that. I don't think when you're at the store, and unfortunately, we were talking earlier on the program about how people go to a box store and they buy stuff, and not only do they go to a box store and buy stuff, they look for what's in bloom.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're looking. And their eye gets attracted to color, and then they pick it up and they go, "Oh, that'll work in the yard," with mm-hmm. no regard to, well, is the site right? What's it going to be like? Does it fit the climate? Does it fit the pH? Mm-hmm. All those different considerations, which is again why I always encourage people to go to independent garden centers where they can get that information. Do you have any clue as to what kind of talk that's going to be about? What the kind of information you're going to get?
Well, Mike, you hit some of it right on the head. So much of planting a yard that's a little bit more sustainable is about knowing your site and knowing what plants are a good match for your site. And so understanding what conditions you're dealing with. And when we're thinking about climate change, some of what we have to understand is that we're going to be dealing with fluctuating conditions. And so it's about picking out the plants that both match your site and have some room for adaptability in the future.
Mm-hmm. And then the other one, pruning. And as I've said many times on this show, it's magic to many people. How you prune. It's. I do it myself, and still try to make sure. Well, it's art, it's science, it's magic, it's all of the above. And I think that one of the great things you can do is learn how to prune your own plants.
Absolutely. It can make such a difference in the life and health of your plants. And if done properly, it's something that is very accessible to your average person
yeah.
if you know what you're doing.
So
no need to hire a fancy service.
Well, unless you've got a big tree.
Or fancy tools.
You know, I say that basically if you've got the trees, small trees and shrubs, yeah. That's go for it. Knock yourself out and learn how to prune. If you've got a large mature tree, now you need pros. And that's why I have people like the Care of Trees on the show.
Absolutely.
All right. So, Megan, this is great. And I'm glad that you're doing the seminar next week with Ron and Bill Wilson, Ron Nowicki and Bill Wilson. Again, it's called Living Off and With the Land. Thank you for being on the show this morning. I'm going to let you go and then wrap up with Bill. Or rather, there's too many names here with Ron and Vicki. So take care. We'll talk again soon, Megan.
Okay. Thanks so much, Mike.
My pleasure. Bye-bye. Ryan and Vicki, can you hang on just 1 second? I want to handle one thing real quick.
Sure.
All right, because I have to go to line one because Rob is on line one with the answer to the last question, and he's got to get running. So, Rob, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing great. Thanks.
What is the name of that building?
It's 300 North LaSalle Drive.
There you go. How did you know that?
I am a carpenter, and I have taken a couple things about lead over at the Green Tech thing, and I just kind of try to stay a little bit versed in these kinds of schools.
Cool. All right. Well, listen, how many tickets do you need?
I'd take a pair. That'd be great.
All right. You got them. I'm going to put you on hold. You might have already gotten the information from Heather, but if you – all right. I will see you at the event on Wednesday, okay?
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. Ron and Vicki, any final words you have about permaculture or what you're doing? Oh, I know what I was going to ask you. The seed catalogs are coming out, and I'm find a ton of them ending up on my desk. Do you have any preferences for where you get your seeds?
Vicki?
Okay. It depends on what you're shopping for. But definitely Johnny Seed out of Maine. Is
Johnny Seeds?
Yeah, the quality of their seeds. I mean, nowadays, you don't know what you're going to get. Many of the seed companies have been bought out by Monsanto and Syngenta and all the, the companies that might be fooling around with GMOs and so forth, but Johnny's is so high quality, and their seeds are certified, and so I would say of all the seed companies, they are, number one.
What about a place like Seed Savers Exchange?
Well, yeah, and then, of course, they are absolutely top-notch, and they are... for reasons that you can imagine, they really protect their collections from interference from surrounding farms.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are the greatest. Fedco is a not quite as well known, but they have organic seeds of... mostly heirloom varieties, but other varieties as well.
Is that's Fedco?
FEDCO.
Okay.
And a lot of the growers use their varieties, and they're very, very well regarded.
And, I say this because we're doing the One Seed Chicago.
Radish.
No,
radish.
Not. I can shut that mic off.
I didn't say anything except radish.
Swiss chard, baby.
Radish.
Swiss chard.
Red and
okay. Oh, your mic went off. Oh.
I made a T-shirt, Mike. It had a picture of an iPod and a picture of a pea pod, and it was kind of like, your choice, iPod, pea pod. And I was going to do another one that had a picture of a hamburger and a picture of Swiss chard, and underneath it was going to say lard. Or charred, and it's supposed to show that you would always pick the charred right over a hamburger
or a radish.
Chard is absolutely the one vegetable you should grow if you can't think of.
I don't know what it is.
Are you listening to this, Heather? I guess
I've never heard of a Swiss chard before. Charred.
What?
And how do you eat it? Don't even know if I've eaten one.
When it's tiny, you put it in salad. When it's mid-size, you can kind of saute it a little bit or steam it, and then you would faint with pleasure because it's so tender.
It is so good.
You could put a tiny bit of butter on it.
I don't know.
And
I'm very partial to my radishes.
With olive oil
and it's loaded with antioxidants.
And then at the end, you put in an egg, like the Italians do, and it just so that you can make soup. You can make like a frittata with goat cheese and a bunch of carrots.
Oh, my God, now I'm just getting hungry.
All right, enough of that, Vicki. All right. Sorry. We got the vote for Swiss chard.
You have to make me some Swiss chard, Mr. Novak.
Well, come on over.
We'll go out to Downers Grove. And
okay.
She's beckoning us. Come on. And besides, you would love their garden, Heather. It's awesome.
You're all invited in Chicagoland.
It's a mature permaculture garden. There aren't that many around, and
That's true because permaculture is such a new concept. To see one that's how long have you been living there?
30 years.
So it is 30 years old over there. So okay, I'm bringing my entire radio audience. Out to the garden, and we will file through one at a time. Please stay on the paths. Please do not pick the Swiss chard. Oh, I got to tell you a Swiss chard story, by the way, real quick, because then we got to go because I've got
growing coming up.
Yeah, Beth Osman. I planted Swiss chard as an ornamental up on the north side outside a bank building a couple of years ago as part of a fall kind of display. Somebody harvested the Swiss chard. And the thing that was interesting was they didn't pull it out of the ground. They chopped it off because they knew it would grow back. And somebody harvested my Swiss chard, which I was using as an ornamental. And I thought, well, this is a really smart person but they're also, I don't know. Maybe they really needed the nutrients. I don't know.
Well, can I say one more thing?
Sure.
You know, everybody wants to eat good food. That's what everybody is asking for. And what it boils down to is that it is still a personal choice that we can make. And I think people know that they can do this themselves, but because it is a common sense choice. But you know what it takes? It takes a little bit of courage because it's not an everyday choice to rip up your lawn or something. And it takes a clarity of vision. You have to educate yourself a little bit about what to do. And so I think that people would do it if they knew how to do it. And that's why I'm really encouraging people to sign up for this program.
I think that's great advice. And again, you can get more information about what Ron and Vicki do on my website, mikenovak.net. Go to this week's show. You can go to their site, the land office, which is www.holdtonature.com. Or you can also go to Liberty Gardens, which, as you might guess, is www.libertygardens.com. And you'll see them. Oh, hey, you got to get the plug in,
I have recipes on there, too.
And there's recipes.
One last short comment.
It better be short.
Okay. Permaculture is a life-affirming path that will lead us to a future of living happily within natural limits.
Yay.
Can you? So you're guaranteeing happiness?
I am.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. If you can do that, I'm on board.
And we love your show, Mike.
Oh, I do too. Hey, thanks, guys. Always a pleasure.
Yep.
I will see you real soon, I'm sure.
Okay.
Yeah, come on over to eat.
I'm going to drag Heather along so she understands what Swiss chard is all about, too.
That would be great.
All right. Take care.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. All right.
You're surprised, though.
What's
that? You're surprised that I'm a radish enthusiast?
Because you're red?
And spicy.
Yep, there you go. I should have known.
Mm-hmm.
I should have figured it out.
It's a personal choice.
I know. All right, let's see. According to my math, it's exactly 9 weeks or 63 days until the beginning of spring. If I see my shadow today, I'm going back to bed. It's only 5 days until my birthday, but I digress. So how about making some of those neglected indoor plants happy? In addition to helping to purify the air, having houseplants in your home can actually help prevent allergies in children. If children are exposed early in life to things that typically cause allergy issues, they will begin to develop a tolerance and immunity to the allergen. Keep your indoor plants happy by picking up soil mixes and fertilizers for every kind of plant at SIDS Greenhouses. SIDS also has one of Chicagoland's largest assortments of decorative pots and pottery, so your plants serve form as well as function. Of course, in case you need any replacements, they have a great selection of lush tropical houseplants as well, and you have less than 2 weeks to take advantage of SIDS poinsettia trade-in. Now through February 1st, take your poinsettia plant to SIDS or Ponzetta and get 25% off a shiny new tropical plant. SIDS, Chicagoland's premier garden centers, are located in Palos Hills on Southwest Highway and in Bolingbrook on Napier Plainfield Road at Hassert Boulevard.
Want to make a positive move in the housing market? Replace your siding and windows. You'll improve your home's look and energy efficiency, too.
Trust DR Services Unlimited, 847-998-1687 for your remodeling and energy needs. Siding, windows, solar and wind power, and more. Rated A-plus by the Better Business Bureau and recommended on Angie's List. DR is a proud member of NARI. DR provides exceptional quality at a fair price. Contact DR at 847-998-1687 or at RestoreTheNorthShore.com.
You know, I should give a prize to anybody who could listen to this song and write down four real words to this lyric. FBI, I heard that. Okay, that's one.
Is that a word? Twitter support on the Swiss chard front.
I do.
Vautran. Oh, tell Heather how beautiful rainbow... Is it chard or chard?
I say chard.
Chard, okay. How beautiful rainbow chard is, so gorgeous and tasty and easy to grow. We are all saying is, give chard a chance.
Aw. All right, and I'm going to give you a chance to get some tickets to the Mayoral Forum this Wednesday. I have other questions, but we're going to skip the questions and just say, how many tickets we got left there, do you think?
We have a few.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Just give us a call, 773-838-9278. We're going to take some orders. If you want to go see, you don't have to answer a question. Just talk to Heather.
Yeah, you can tweet us, too. Just give me your real name, and we'll put you on Will Call.
Or Facebook us.
And how many you want.
Yeah, let us know, and we'll give them out until we don't have any more.
Yeah, we want butts in the seats.
We do. We want the candidates held accountable. Let us go to line one and bring in Beth Osmond. How you doing, Beth?
Great, thanks.
Thank you for being on the show. Where's Jody?
Jody's here.
Oh, I thought he was not going to be there today. I thought he was turning over the task to you. Beth and Jody run Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm. You're near Ottawa, Illinois. You're a CSA. In the past, I've talked about CSAs on the program, which is community-supported agriculture. But in this case, you're supplying meats to the market as well. Now, do you grow any vegetables, or is it just meats?
We just provide meat at this point.
Mm-hmm. So what makes, in an era where lots of people want to go vegetarian, what makes a family decide to become a meat farm?
Well, we were a vegetable farm originally. We started farming about 9 years ago, and we started out as a vegetable CSA, which was great, but it's primarily just a two-person operation, and vegetables are a lot of work in a very short amount of time. Jody grew up on a farm where they always had animals. They would have chickens or pigs or cows or whatever at different times, and he's always loved livestock. And so we started thinking about going more towards the meat production, and that's in 2007, we started Illinois' first meat CSA. Taking the principle of the CSA where people commit and enter into a mutually beneficial relationship with the farmer. We took that from the vegetable world where we had been for a couple of years, and we started a meat CSA, and it's been a great success. We've really enjoyed it.
And you say you've been doing that how long now?
We started the farm initially 9 years ago.
Okay.
And in 2007, we converted to meat.
And we're raising
livestock.
Okay, so and you say you're small. What does small mean in terms of raising meat?
We currently bring meat to about 300 families a month, and we're hoping this year to increase that up to about 450, and that's probably our maximum size unless we were to seriously change the format of what we do.
And how many livestock do you have then?
Well, throughout the summertime, we raise all of our meat birds because they're raised on pasture. They have to be raised when the weather is conducive. So we start, we raise about 7,000 to 8,000 chickens throughout the summertime.
All right, that's more than I thought, but that's still small, obviously.
It is pretty small, although they are a lot of work. They're probably the most labor-intensive because they're in pens, and the pens have to be moved twice a day because they're open bottom and they get fresh pasture, and then they're fed and watered as well. For our beef and our pork, we raise some of it here on our farm, and then we also cooperate with a couple of neighbors who have been developing their beef herd and their pork herd, respectively, for many years, and so they're the experts there. And so we know where the animals are raised and how they're raised. And so some of those, the larger livestock, we purchase from them and then take to the butcher and make part of our CSA.
You know, that's one of the things I noticed on your website. And by the way, all the connections, the links are there on my website, mikenovak.net, this week's show. You can go to Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm, which is cedarvalleysustainable.com. And a question on there, you know, is you send it to a butcher and the meat goes out of your hands into somebody else's. And the question was, well, do you trust the butcher? And what does that mean in terms of safety of the meat? And your answer is?
We trust our butchers implicitly. We use, there are two different butchers we use. In Illinois, there's only one option for poultry custom butchering, and that's in Arthur, Illinois. It's a family-run operation. We take our animals down there. I drop them off in the morning at about 7 a.m. I pick them up later that afternoon, bring them home, put them in our freezer. It's just a really wonderful operation. It's very transparent. You can see what they're doing, which to me is really important. And then for our beef and pork, we go to Bittner's Locker in Eureka, Illinois. They're the only custom processor in Illinois that's certified organic. And although we're not certified organic, one of the reasons we really like them is that means that our sausage that we have processed, we can get made without MSG. Our bacon that we have made, they'll do without added nitrates, so which is really nice. Our customers like that a lot. And again, just a small family operation. They're butchering a few animals at a time. They know us, we know them, and it's just a really good working relationship.
In about 30 seconds, because that's about all the time we have left, Heather was asking, my producer Heather, earlier about when you kill an animal, does it make a difference in what was the question?
Well, I was informed that when you kill an animal abruptly or inhumanely, it shocks the animal, so it releases toxins into, because the animal is under stress, into the body. But when they're killed humanely, you don't have that process, and therefore you end up getting a better tasting meat.
Is there anything to that?
I would agree. Yeah, I think that the way the animals are handled, the amount of stress that they're under, the way that they're treated, and the experience of the people working with them really does make a difference, because stress release does release chemicals into our body. It just as when we're stressed, we get you get that adrenaline rush. Animals will do the same, and that'll affect the quality of the meat.
Well, thank you so much, Beth Osmond, for being on Good Growing. I hope we talk. Let's talk again during the year. I'm going to see how the season's going for you. You could still use a few more people for the CSA, I take it, for this year?
We do. We have open enrollment throughout the year, so you can sign up at any time.
And you can go to that link that is on my website, and we will chat again. And good luck to you this year. I hope everything goes well. If you're concerned about the quality of your meat, this is one place that you can get it, Cedar Valley Sustainable Farm. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, that's it. I guess we have to say go Bears.
Go Bears, yes. And I have to apologize to Samuel for not calling him back.
I will get to
Sam. We will get to his question. I'm sorry, sir. And also, Sancho the bus driver had one, too, and we'll have to save him for next week.
Hey, to have an overabundance of phone calls, that's good.
It's a good problem to have.
Go green or go home.